It's time now for our family matter segment. That threw me a little bit, but I'm back. Mental illness refers to a wide range of mental health conditions, disorders that affect your emotions, thoughts, and behaviors. But it's an issue that's still very much stigmatized in South Africa in particular. And today we speak to Andrea Schneider, who aims to lift the lid and have an open conversation on mental illness and depression. And in fact, she's going to be speaking at the next Pecha Kucha event, which is on the 4th of September, about her incredible life story, The Gifts of Mental Health Illness, and her struggle with her self-described Big Five. Welcome to the studio, Andrea.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for coming in. Let's start at the top. You want to destigmatize mental illness. It's not all in someone's head. Why?
So I think what I really want to say is that it is in someone's head and it is real. And it's often a chemical imbalance in the brain, or it's an impulsive response to past trauma, a learned behavior. And so although we say it's not in someone's head as an analogy, it actually is in the head, and it's a very, very real thing. What I know is that we can't tell by looking at somebody what is going on for them inside their head. And if they say, or whether they don't say, that they have something going on, it's actually a lot more complex than that. It's a lot more historical and it's a lot more biochemical.
Why do people not want to talk about it? Why is that? I mean, people will talk about an injury, you know, on their leg or a kidney transplant and other organs of their body. But when it comes to the mind, why don't people want to talk about it?
Look, I think to simplify this answer, it's societal pressure to perform and complete certain life stages and the tasks that come with that. And then when you can't do that, it creates stigma, which shuts people down. So if they're struggling and they can't perform certain tasks, they shut down and they sort of isolate, or they don't want to talk about it. And then if they do talk about it, they get stigmatized. So they then don't talk about it because it's not visible necessarily. It's the sort of stigma and discrimination that come with it.
So you mean they feel ashamed to admit to it?
There's an internal stigma and there's an external stigma.
Right. Mm. So you are changing this. This is your mission, to make people talk about it more.
I really want people to talk about it more.
And how are you going about that?
Well, I'm just going to just let you know, I talked at the last Pecha Kucha,
not the one coming up. Yeah. Okay.
So that was my starting point.
Right.
And then I was invited to come and talk on your radio station, which has been my second point. Mm. And I have a sort of cause in terms of doing this, around doing not only this, but also talking about drug use and people who are using drugs and why they're using drugs. And it's just about really, I won't go into that today, but just about really looking at what can't we talk about? What are we isolating? What are we keeping to ourselves and shaming ourselves for when we could be sharing and creating better and happier communities that support each other better?
And from your own personal experience, because that you speak quite openly about all the different mental illnesses that you've been diagnosed with, how did you start talking about it? What was the turning point for you so that perhaps someone who's out there listening might be inspired?
I've had a number of hospitalizations, and in the first couple of hospitalizations, people didn't understand. I didn't know how to I didn't understand what was wrong with me. And when I started to understand, I realized the only way I was going to connect with people, keep friends or make new friends, was if I was open about it. And so I've got increasingly open about it, and it's allowed me to connect more deeply with people. And that's one of the massive, massive gifts that I've been given through this process of being diagnosed, learning and understanding myself.
Can one, I mean, ask this, you know, broadly, be cured, or is it something that you have to manage, like a chronic condition?
Well, for me, I've got bipolar disorder. So that's a chronic condition. So that's something that most likely I'll have to be medicated all my life. Mm. It doesn't mean I'll have to be on the same medication or as much medication, but it just means that probably for the rest of my life, I'm going to have to be on some kind of medication to balance my chemicals in my brain out. It also, I mean, there's all sorts of other conditions that I have, and some of them are the medications used for different purposes. Yeah.
And at what point should one consider looking for help and getting medication? What are the signs?
Okay, so I think I'd prefer to talk from my experience. Mm. I'm not a doctor. I'm not an expert. I've just got a lot of experience of my life.
Exactly.
Okay. So the signs are sort of a feeling of hopelessness, a feeling of lack of energy, a feeling of being very scared or nervous or fearful. And at that point, if you feel that's going on for a certain time period that is unusual for yourself or feels uncomfortable, it's good to go and get some help for it. I think it's a key question you're asking me now because it's the make or break as to whether it becomes so bad that you start losing certain things, relationships, jobs, or whatever. If you start leaving symptoms alone and just manifesting and getting worse.
You talk about the gifts of mental illness. Let's talk about what you mean by that. What are the gifts that come with a diagnosis?
So, I mean, this is a bit more lighthearted. So, for example, ADHD is a condition and there's increasing awareness of adult ADHD, and it allows me to do, for example, a lot at once. So I can be working on a number of things at once. You know, the OCD component of things is, you know, I'm quite pedantic about certain things, and I'm, you know, try and make sure my work is, and I'm thinking more around my work, but the things are done in a certain way and that they're done correctly. The borderline personality disorder and the bipolar really, really allow me to feel a range of emotions very extremely. So my life is very rich from an emotional perspective, which gives it a beauty that I think somebody perhaps who doesn't experience life, it's hard. I'm not going to lie. It's hard at certain points, but it's also extremely beautiful and it's extremely rich at other times.
You talk about the big five. What do you mean by what are the big five?
I'd use that for Petra Kuchar. So the big five for me would be binge eating disorder, ADHD, OCD, borderline personality disorder, and bipolar. And those are my mental health illnesses.
Right. So those are the big five. And when did you or your parents realize that perhaps they needed to get help for you?
Yeah, I was very problematic as a teenager and with no clear diagnosis or no clear understanding of kind of why I was acting in the way I was, but very, very problematic. Mm. And then I got diagnosed with the first diagnosis at the age of 19. And I started to get treatment. And slowly over the years, the diagnoses have kind of grown and been given more and more context as to why I am sort of the way I am.
You sound like you've got an amazing support system around you.
I can't deny that.
Maybe tell us a bit about, because often, you know, the focus is on the patient, but actually those around the patient need to get educated too in order to understand more deeply and know how to deal with various situations depending on diagnosis.
I've got an amazing support system. I must say that one has to search for it. It doesn't just come to you. You've got to be careful of the people that you put in the life, the doctors you put in the life, the psychologist, you know, everything. I've been very careful about who I've brought in and who I have left behind at certain points.
So you mean you've been through a range of people who could possibly help you, but you've got to find the right fit for you personally.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's not always the first psychologist, perhaps, that is the right fit, right?
Yes.
You shouldn't give up.
Or sometimes it is, but it's a fit for a certain period. For example,
a certain stage of your life.
Yes, exactly.
And then it's time to perhaps move on.
Here's
a WhatsApp that's come in. Hi, Bianca. Our son is in grade 9 and has ADD. This gives new meaning to challenges for homework and studying for tests. Any suggestions to help us with this, please? That's from John. Were you also diagnosed with you had ADHD, is that correct?
I've got ADHD. It's a similar diagnosis. Yeah. So Look, I'm going to step out of this one because I'm not a...
You're not an expert, but I'm not an expert. From your own experience.
From my own experience, medication is very helpful.
Medication.
Mindfulness exercises, and there's a lot of mindfulness tools being developed for children. There's mindfulness yoga, there's, you know, all sorts of things, and that is another very good option, helping kids kind of learn to focus and learn to manage things. But I know that this is not the answer most people want, but medication has been helpful for me, but I'm a lot older.
And what about things like meditation? Is that something that
would fall under the mindfulness?
Yes. Is that something you've engaged with as well? That you find it helpful?
It is, but it's very hard for me to engage with. My brain goes at 100 kilometers per hour. So, I use different things. I'm very, tactile. So I use smell. I've always got clay with me. I've always got something I'm playing with, and I've always got sort of scent around me. Even when I'm working, I've always got things around me. I mean, my colleagues will know that I am always carrying things in my bag. Mm. I use those squishy toys that kids have at the moment. Yeah. Anything to help me just focus. Yeah. Mm.
The other cause you're fighting for is to have people show more sensitivity to the family members of friends who live or interact with people who have mental illnesses. Please explain why this is so important to you too.
I just think it's very, very hard. It's to live or to be with or to be close to someone who does struggle, especially if they don't want to talk about it or don't want to deal with it or don't have knowledge of what they're going through, but are just presenting symptoms. So I just think there should be more support for the families and some more knowledge, imparting more knowledge to the families of how to deal with that person.
Would you say that mental health illnesses are often common amongst people who struggle with addiction as well and abuse? Do the two often go hand in hand? It's something you also speak about.
It's very complex to answer that question. Mm. But I would say that because of the lack of resources in this country for people who can't get treatment for mental health illnesses, often substances are something that are then used to medicate themselves. And so that's a very misunderstood concept.
Yes.
And that needs a lot more attention. Mm. So somebody's not a bad person because they're smoking tuck or they're smoking heroin. They're actually medicating because they can't get help anywhere else or they don't have knowledge anywhere else. And it's really, we have to be more aware and compassionate towards that.
It's true. It's a very valid point. And what about medication? Is this something over the years from your own experience has changed? It's not always a constant thing. It's something also that you have to manage. It can also change, can't it?
Oh, definitely, yeah. No, I've tried. A medication has a certain time period that it works for. And for some people, a medication may work for 7-8 years. Some people, it works for 20 years. For me, I find medication works about 2 to 3 years.
And then you can feel the symptoms, perhaps.
They start coming back, yeah. Yeah.
And then that's at the point where you have to reach out and change and get help.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah.
And have you found medication has changed your life, of course?
Yes, I have, yeah. Yeah. For the bipolar aspect. Yes.
For the bipolar aspect of your life. What about treatment options available in South Africa? Is this something that you found easy to access?
Well, I'm quite privileged, and there's two reasons I'm quite privileged. First of all, I've got medical aid, and secondly, I've got bipolar. And bipolar falls under a prescribed minimum benefit, so it means that I have to have certain things paid for. It's a chronic condition.
Yes.
So it means that I've got to have a number of things covered. And so I have to have psychiatric sessions, hospitalizations, and medication covered. So from that perspective, I've had a lot of sort of benefits. But in terms of South Africa, you'd have to differentiate for me whether somebody is on medical aid or not on medical aid, you know, because it's two different scenarios completely.
It's an interesting aspect of it. And just to finish off, because we are unfortunately running out of time, tell us a little bit about how you live your life productively and you have a rich and full life and how you've managed to overcome the stigma of mental illness by being open.
I think I must say, my husband is a very quiet, gentle person, and that has been great to be married. It's been easier. it's calmed me down. And I think talking about mental, the more I talk about it, the less I'm worried about what that person thinks. So in other words, like, what you think about my mental health is not my business.
Exactly.
If that makes sense, you know, what I'm telling you doesn't, is not my business, what your thoughts are. I'm just sharing with you, and how you take that is not my business, really.
Absolutely.
And so having purpose for me has changed my life. My work has changed my life. Because it's such meaningful, purposeful work.
Fantastic advice there from our guest, Andrea Schneider, who aims to lift the lid and have more conversations about mental illness and depression, and talks about the gifts of mental health illness. Thank you so much for sharing your story.
That's a pleasure. Thank you.